search your killer. Wonderful, isn't it? Pheromone signature left by his body. These are scent molecules. 10 years ago, one of his kind stalked and eliminated an elite special forces crew in Central America. There were two survivors. They indicated that when trapped, the creature activated a self-destruct device that destroyed enough rainforest to cover 300 city blocks. Remarkable weaponry. That's right, Lieutenant. Otherworld life forms.
Huh?
A fucking alien. Iwo Jima, Cambodia, Beirut, drawn by heat and conflict. He's on safari. Lions, the tigers, the bears. Oh my.
Welcome to the Three Men and a Retrospective Podcast. Look at the Predator film series. Join Garrett.
We are a rescue team, not assassins.
Adam.
You son of a bitch.
And Matt.
How'd you snag a ticket on this shitmobile?
As they get themselves to the analysis chopper and review each Predator film not yet covered here at Percolated Media.
So why don't you use the regular army? What do you need us for?
Because some damn fool accused you of being the best.
If you would like to hear the co-host views on the Alien vs. Predator films and Prey, check out our Percolated Media archives as the films were reviewed back in 2022.
This is getting better minute.
So stick around, podcast listeners.
Guess who's back?
The Percolated Media Predator Retrospective begins now.
Grab a seat. Enjoy the show. This is history.
The Mandalorian and Grogu. Released May 22nd, 2026. Wait a second. That's not the movie we watched? Oh, yeah. We're talking about Predator Badlands. That was released November 7th, 2025. Budget, $105 million. Wow. Box office, so far, at the time we record this, $139 million. And this was directed by Dan Trachtenberg. Matt, I gotta ask you right off the bat, how the hell is Dan Trachtenberg the Jon Favreau of this series, where he's pretty much taken over Predator land?
Forget Favreau, he's more like the Dave Filoni at this point.
Yeah.
He's got every hat possible. And look, God bless him for it. He got an opportunity and he seized it. But I am shocked that we're talking about a series that really had no direction for a while. It was kind of disparate elements every once in a while. And now we've had three movies in a row with a singular voice at the helm. It's just very strange that this series is in the place it is now.
Yep. And this is coming off of a pretty positive review from our third on this podcast, as we talked about Predator Killer of Killers earlier in the week. Adam, coming into Predator Badlands, you said at the end of the podcast earlier this week, you were really looking forward to this. How much were you looking forward to Predator Badlands going into it?
Going out of Killer of Killers, I was excited. I thought what Trachtenberg did with Prey was a decent film. I don't think any of us loved it, but we thought it was a step in the right direction. So for the first time having a vision come back with an idea, with a plan, I thought was a good idea. And then I saw the trailer, and my hope went right out the fucking window.
Wow, the trailer turned you off.
I've tried to kind of keep my feelings on all of it close to the vest. People know that I love the Predator as a creature, as a character design, and all that. But that trailer that I saw, and I think that they made some changes. I think they made some changes in post. I think they made some changes after people's initial reaction to it. Yeah, what I saw in that trailer... Man, I revolted against this pretty quick, I will say.
Oh boy, Matt, last time that happened, we had about an hour and 45 minute diatribe about The Predator, so I am scared about where this is going. But you know what? I saw one trailer of this, and I didn't realize that was Elle Fanning in this. And if you remember at the end of last week's show, I was like, God, Elle Fanning's in this movie? I had no fucking idea. And I'm not going to say I had low expectations, but I was just like, what are we doing? It felt like a different franchise at that point. And I want to say that a lot throughout this podcast. This feels like a different franchise.
Well, it does based on premise alone. They've gone from making the Predator an obstacle / the villain to the protagonist and the character with the most screen time. So it is a radical departure right down to a conceptual level. But it was one that I was curious to see how it'd be handled. because that is so different. I think with a franchise like this, which has had, as we've talked about, quality is all over the map. And oftentimes, one of our complaints with certain movies is that, well, it doesn't feel like a Predator movie. Well, my question is then, what makes a Predator movie in people's minds? Because they've taken a lot of different swings, and this is certainly the most radical of them, of going up to bat. But I'm not going to say I wasn't excited to see it, because I was more curious than excited. But I'll say the same thing that I said about some franchises we've covered. Look at the sister, you know, its sister in a lot of ways, Alien. I was concerned when Fox got bought out by Disney. And look, Romulus was certainly more harder-edged than a Disney acquisition would lead you to believe. But seeing these trailers combined with the PG-13 rating, which I give no fucks about, but it was a talking point nevertheless, I thought this was the Disneyfication of Predator.
It sure felt that way. And look, I made the joke at the beginning of this podcast that it felt like The Mandalorian. Given that The Mandalorian was so successful, do you think they were riding that wave?
I don't know if it was because of that or if it's just made clear of it already. Love the Predator, right? Love that creature. This series to me is almost Ghostbusters in its design of there's a great movie and it's a franchise. There's Predator and that movie's there and everything else is kind of law of what the hell is going on. Are they right in the wave of it? It feels that way when you watch the movie, but I don't know if that was the design or if Trachtenberg is like, look, and it could be by edict that we're pushing these universes together. I think, and I might as well put it right here, I think this movie is more in the Alien Earth universe than it is the Predator universe.
Well, I think at this point, Alien and Predator are the same universe. It makes that perfectly clear throughout the course of this.
Well, yes, but I feel like this is made side by side with Alien Earth. I don't think this is made side by side with Predator.
Or side by side with Romulus, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. But look, I'll put it here. This was a female Predator.
You think so?
Quay was a female, and I have no doubt in my mind that they decided to change that voice in post. Because when I saw that first trailer, a couple people said it, and then they changed it. There is no way that that was anything other than a female Predator on her first hunt. And then Disney got cold feet. And I think everything in here is a decision of we need to change this franchise. And look, I'm all for changing a franchise if you're going to make it work. I'm for doing it. But this, The Mandalorian and Grogu is at least a good point of who are you making this accessible for? Is it accessible for me who's been here the whole time, or is it for my kids? And I think that's Disney.
So to Adam's point, they should have called this movie Predator Backlash instead of Predator Badlands, because there has been nothing but negativity from a large portion of the populace the moment the first trailer came out. And if there's one thing we've learned about Disney, they are very reactionary when it comes to fan reception. We've talked about this with Star Wars. We've talked about this with Marvel. Not in great detail, but certainly been prevalent nevertheless. So I'm not surprised, and I think there is logic to Adam's theory. But the other thing, because The Mandalorian, you guys have both talked about it, this feels like the opposite, but also the same, and the similarity is that we're making this show as a stepping stone or a launching point for world building, and then we'll build out from there. The difference is The Mandalorian, the first season, told a singular story at the end of the day and actually used most of its runtime, which is why I'm baffled by the fact they're making it a movie, and I've hated everything they've done with that show since the first season. So I have no desire to see the movie, even though we're going to review it next year because it's in theaters. This is the opposite, where Killer of Killers and this combined, because they've come out the same year, feels like we had all these ideas for Predator on television, like Disney Plus or Hulu, but we're not going to have the budget or the time to make them as fleshed out as we wanted. So let's take two slots theatrically and make Killer of Killers, where we can compound a lot of ideas into a short time, and then take a lot of our ideas that we had for a Predator TV show and make it into a under 2-hour movie. That's been my perception from a bird's eye view, looking at these developments.
What's curious to me is after sending Prey straight to streaming and Killer of Killers, we're going theatrical with this. Now, the $105 million price tag would justify that, but Adam, are you surprised that they released this thing to theaters?
I think you have to. I think there was a mistake of releasing Prey on streaming. I think they did that because they just acquired Fox, and I think they wanted to see what the response was going to be to whether or not they were going to keep these two franchises, and I'm going to kind of, I mean, we almost need to start putting them together, or if they were going to sell them off and get something for them, maybe get Simpsons rights back from Universal for theme parks, something like that was what I thought. So I think Prey was a test run. I wish I had theaters close to me that had played the double feature, but I would have had to travel almost an hour each way to go see it. I do think this belongs in theaters. I think this is made with that kind of scope and feel that it's, you have to. I don't care if you make this movie for half the budget, you're going to make it back. And at 105, 110, so call it 160 all in, worldwide, because this does play to an Asian audience more than some other ones do, and you got a lot of money there, this is going to be okay. But I think it's going to hurt domestically.
So if you remember also, when we heard Dan Trachtenberg had a new movie coming out, we did not know it was going to be a Predator movie when Prey was first announced. That was almost kind of a reveal they did after the fact, from my recollection. And to the point of Alien, I think you're right that maybe Prey was looked at more as a testing ground to see what would people give a shit about with Predator? Because the last two movies, Predators and The Predator, left little to no impression and did not do particularly well in either instance. So I can understand a certain amount of cold feet with a studio that, let's be honest, they're not doing as well with their current properties as they once were. Look at Star Wars and look at Marvel. Not only were you seeing division among the fans that used to gobble up everything, no questions asked, but because you were putting out such a massive quantity of content, you were destined to have failures. And unfortunately, they've had a lot more misses lately than they've had hits. So I could see something like Predator, combined with the fact that Prey did get good reviews and good word of mouth, and because we'll crossbreed with Alien, which is appropriate, Romulus also did very well, even though I personally didn't care for it. Mm-hmm. So maybe this was Trachtenberg playing with house money, which is how he's become as high up in the totem pole as he is with this property.
Well, things already shot past its budget. It made $40 million its first weekend. And
yeah, but it tanked this second weekend.
Yeah, weekend it fell pretty hard.
But I think a lot of that is it has not been a good year for the box office.
Yeah, that's true. And look, will James Cameron save it again? I guess we'll see. We'll cover that.
I won't bet against him.
I wouldn't either.
If there's one man I won't bet against, it's him and those giant blue cats.
You're not fucking kidding. And I can almost guarantee that movie's going to make $1 billion. But if it doesn't, guys, I hate to be this guy, but I don't see theaters lasting much longer if this is the kind of takes that we're getting, because we've had a lot of fucking duds this year.
You know what? I'm starting to blame the theaters themselves. I discussed in our group when I got to see this, and I went just the Tuesday after the weekend, and there was two IMAX showings, a Dolby Digital, an IMAX 3D, a big screen 3D, and then one standard view. One. Wow. So you know what? Bleep you, AMC, for trying to get an extra $5 per ticket out of me. That's just ridiculous. They can't schedule movies anymore. And instead, I get to have some, what is it, chain pop lollies? I don't know what the heck the Chainsaw Man is from. Like, great. You're getting so many random movies in the 16 screen theater, but you can't put a decent amount of showings, and nothing started before 4 p.m. I know I'm the old man that wants to see a movie at noon, but come on.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm the night owl. Like, I love going to movies at 9:30 because I know on a weeknight, the teenagers are going to be home doing other stuff. And the old people are going to stay at home because they're in bed by 7:30 because it gets dark out at 4:30. So I see that as a win-win nowadays. But I think one of the things also is, and this will be a conversation probably on our year-end show very soon, is that a lot of television over the last decade has become much more cinematic. So there's now that thing of, why would I go see this in theater when I can watch it from home? Which has always been the knock against like putting TV shows and making the movie.
Yeah, that's been a knock for a decade.
But the counter now is that television that was once cinematic has gotten progressively cheaper. Look at The Mandalorian. The first season definitely looks like they spent their money.
It's amazing.
As the show went on, it looked like, and the Obi-Wan show did this, where some of it, like, they had enough money for, like, one big shot or one big set piece, and then they cut corners everywhere else. So you couldn't justify putting it on the big screen. In this case, I'm not going to call this movie cheap, because it's not, But I also don't think it's something that I had to justify seeing on the big screen. Like, if I watched this at home the same way I watched Prey, even though there's more technological advancements in this by comparison with the setting and whatnot, I wouldn't have felt like I had was missing out on something. But also, the last time like I've gone to a theater and felt like I was justified seeing something on the big screen would have been like Oppenheimer. But that's also a very different type of movie than this. Maybe Avatar will do that, because I felt that about the second one. So we'll see. And also, too, the only movie this year that's been really a juggernaut at multiplexes is goddamn Jurassic Park. And that's a situation where we don't understand how, but those movies keep doing remarkably well. And it's just as futuristic and creature-oriented as you could argue this is.
Sinners was a pretty good profit machine as well.
It was, but it also was not... It's not a big budget, spectacle piece. Because look at Adam, you and I watched Brave New World in a theater, Captain America, and I sat there going, I can't believe they thought this was good enough to be, looked good enough to be in theaters.
Now, Matt, we've heard Adam's take at the movies. What was your viewing experience like for Predator Badlands?
All by myself. Exactly. I walked in and there was nobody there on a Tuesday night, and I'm like, this is perfect for me. So I still shut off my phone and all that stuff because I like the immersion, but it was weird to have a solo screening for a Predator movie, because I thought with the PG-13 rating that would at least broaden your appeal. But then again, I think theater employees don't give a shit about carding people that are trying to see R-rated movies. It's nowhere near like it used to be, where if you were underage, you had to like buy a ticket for one movie and then walk into a separate theater when nobody was paying attention. Nowadays, nobody gives a shit, which also leads me to believe that multiplexes are not long for this world.
And so you mentioned the rating, and I think it's important to say that, you know, the first trailer, you had some response, and then it was news that this was going to get a PG-13 rating. And then Disney was like, hang on, maybe not, maybe not. And then it officially got a PG-13 rating. And then they rushed out to be like, well, the only reason is because it's alien blood. So this is the violence that you all know of Predator. But don't worry, it's only because nobody's bleeding red. They were making excuses from this movie for months beforehand. And I'll say I fell into that. I went, okay, at least they know that it's PG-13 because it's aliens. Good. I'm glad I'm going to get some classic Predator. It started to make me feel good. In the 2 weeks before I saw this film, I got myself hyped, and I was going to believe that I was going to go in and see, if not a great Predator movie, a good one that was going to reinvigorate my hope and happiness for the franchise.
Another point of comparison with the rating controversy, it reminded me of, remember when Terminator Salvation, it was announced, was going to be PG-13?
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's very comparable, because they're both, you know, the excuse for that was, well, humans aren't bleeding, but you're watching robots get blown to, you know, it's the standards and practices argument for like Batman the Animated Series, where you couldn't show Batman bleeding, but you can throw the ventriloquist dummy into a industrial fan and watch it get blown apart, or watch it get shot by Tommy guns, because it's not human. But the question is, do people give a shit about ratings anymore? Apparently they do, because this is the most I've heard about it in years. But that whole thing of like PG-13 versus R, and people actually giving that contemplation before deciding to take a 13-year-old to an R-rated movie, those days are long gone. So I'm just perplexed that people were as up in arms about it as they were.
Wait, all because the Insidious
again, films? The lines have gotten so blurred.
Yeah. Is it Insidious or the other ones that Conjuring. Were there? Conjuring. Aren't the all of those PG-13?
The first two are R.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotta tell you guys, I didn't even think about the rating as I was watching this. In fact, I fell into it. I was like, you know what? It felt R to me, but that's because of all the violence that was on, not humans, but aliens. And for the record, we don't have one human in this movie anyway.
Yeah, that's another way. Because they also, trailer, because I saw it, I knew that Elle Fanning was playing an android. You saw the Weyland-Yutani logo in the trailer, so I'm like, okay, that would have possibly surprised me going into the theater, because I didn't know that this was going to have some alien DNA, but that gave it away, and I'm like, okay, now I know there's no human characters, because you kind of played that card. And I found the contrast interesting, because Romulus was a hard R, and was shockingly graphic for...
Oh god, yeah.
For a modern... Like, I mean, it's Fede Alvarez, so I wasn't surprised. And I was more surprised that they allowed him to go that far. It's just funny comparing this to Alien. Prey and Badlands, it's kind of the equivalent of Prometheus and Covenant in a lot of ways, where it's rebooting the series, in a way. And you have one instance, you have the OG filmmaker returning with Prometheus to do something that's a pretty big departure, but still has the DNA, no pun intended. And Trachtenberg kind of did the same thing where he brought it back to basics with Prey, where it's, you know, a singular predator, not an urban environment, nowhere near as tactile as the sequels got. But the reception for Prometheus and Covenant versus the reactions for Prey and Badlands have been radically different.
Well, my theatrical experience was I went on, it was a pretty big day for me. I've had a career change recently, and right after that confirmation that I had gotten that job, I was like, you know what? I want to celebrate by going to the movies. My fiance was away visiting her daughter, so it was a solo effort for me. I went to the theater. It was about 5 o'clock on, I want to say, a Wednesday, and there were, I'd say, about a dozen people in there. Pretty enthusiastic, but again, it was a small crowd. And this movie, as we've mentioned, it started off strong and it's kind of fallen off. And I'm just wondering if we're going to have a movie that has legs anymore.
I don't think so. Yeah. Because outside of Jurassic World, everything's kind of come and gone. And again, the theater to digital release window has shrunk considerably year after year, seemingly. So even if you have something that has decent legs, all things considered, you're not going to have the biggest theatrical window that you normally would have. And part of this is also just the fact that we still live in a world, though, for as much we cry about movie theaters possibly dying, we're still getting like a new movie every week.
Yep,
yeah. You know, that used to be like the summer exclusive where you'd get Compounded and that would give you impetus to go to the theater every week. It's a lot more spread out. We'll get big chunks where that happens. And then like August is like a dead zone this year.
It's just going to be so funny once we finally get to Marvel proper and we talk about the fact that the movies that we're going to be talking about, they were so hyped up and there were so many enthusiastic crowds with those movies and they cannot rely on those anymore. So what are they going to have?
No, it's
more Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, Lilo and Stitch.
Which made $1 billion. Can't believe it.
It did, but you look at the movies this year that were number one at the box office for multiple weeks. Minecraft, Brave New World was the only, the first film to top the box office for 3 week kids in a row, and I'm shocked by that. Sinners did it multiple weeks in a row, but Sinners, the trick with that, it was the highest opening weekend for a non-sequel since, ironically, Jordan Peele's movie Nope. And it only had a 5% drop in its second weekend.
Yeah, that was like a Titanic effect.
Like, that is a very small drop for any movie. But because it was a horror movie, 48 million weekend one, 45 weekend two. Whereas you look at the week after, Thunderbolts comes out, 74 million opening weekend, second weekend, 32. And the biggest one, Fantastic Four, 117 million opening weekend, 38 million the second weekend. That is a, speaking of Titanic, that is a Titanic level drop. And we've had Predator opening weekend, 40 million. And this past weekend, Now You See Me, Now You Don't beat it.
Oy vey.
A sequel to a movie that came out 12 fucking years ago.
I didn't even know there was a second one of those.
And, you know, Black Phone.
Now it's a franchise. Add it.
And the weekend before that was Black Phone 2, which only made $8 million.
Yeah, that one flopped hard. We're going to get to that eventually.
Yeah, and that was a weird thing where it won its opening weekend, lost its second weekend, and then reclaimed the title its third weekend, which is kind of a weird thing. But yeah, it's just, you know, we talked about Superman. Did it have the legs they thought it would? And the biggest successes have been Weapons and Sinners.
Yep.
So, message to studios. One word titles, number one. but seriously, like, I think a lot of that is just the, like, when you hear the Fantastic Four First Steps, you're like, oh god, that's a long title, and everything has a subtitle. You know, One Ticket for Weapons gets you thinking, like, oh, what's this movie? Yeah. You get people who normally don't give a shit about horror films. I think Sinners was the same way. That was not sold as a horror film.
No,
it so wasn't. All in all, the fact that Tron Ares won its weekend, it won by default, and then I forgot that movie even existed until I looked at this list just now.
We start off with this 20th Century Fox fanfare, as well as some text on the screen, which I always love. And we see that the Yalta, how do we say that, Adam?
Oh, God.
Yalta?
What I've heard, it's Yalta.
Okay, so Yalta are prey to none, friend to none, and predator to all. We get a shot from inside the Predator planet as we see some sort of scorpion eat a bug, and we see a sort of speeder bike. And there we have some steps on some water and some moving around the planet before we get our first look at our protagonist, Deke, who's here to earn his cloak, a.k.a. invisibility. Boy, I had no idea that they had to go through this much to get a cloak.
Well, it does kind of make sense because the we found out that part of the Predator mythology, there is a rite of passage component with several of the movies. So I found this to be pretty consistent with what this has been known for. I mean, look, I'm not going to these movies looking for continuity each and every time, as long as the DNA is there. I keep using that word a lot, but it's sci-fi, so I think it's appropriate. Because Predator, to Adam's point, much like Ghostbusters, you had lightning in a bottle, and they haven't been able to replicate it. So kind of like the essence, you almost can't even define anymore. It's your personal what you want.
Adam, I have to ask you, the fan, as somebody who has loved this character as long as you have, we've seen it fight Arnold. We've seen it fight Danny Glover. We've seen it fight Adrian Brody. We see it fight... Well, let's not talk about that movie again. I don't want to get you riled up again. How did you feel coming in knowing that now Trachtenberg was going to make him the protagonist of this film that we're going to follow?
I mean, do I like T2 more than I like Terminator? One, no, I don't. Terminator's a better film. I thought it was okay because, you know what? You need to do something with this franchise. And who's our big, unless he's going to fight The Rock, right? I mean, who do you have that's an action star that's going to command a screen presence? One, I would love to see Predator beat the shit out of Dwayne, screw up office building. Never mind. All right. Listen to every other time I talk about him.
Fucking Adam's Jumanji the literal before. Smashing machine.
I thought it was okay. I'm like, you know what? He's never been the forefront. He's the monster. But I also felt like, yeah, you're getting later in the nightmare type series, you know, because you're focusing on the monster in the closet. But I also was like, you know what? Times have changed. Sci-fi movie. You're doing the Predator. As long as you do him really cool, really badass, keeping that menace, keeping that chest pumping kind of, I mean, I hate to do it, but just that like macho badassery that you had with the other ones, at least you're still bringing that forward and you can do it by focusing on the guy. Times have changed. You can not have to hide them just because of budgetary and costuming reasons. I thought it was not a bad decision, and it was a way to restart what we had. They were very clear that we're not going to try to worry about the time frame. This is just, it's in the future. We're not going to conflict with anything. We're rebooticaling our universe by doing it this way, and I was okay with that.
Interesting. This blew me away. I gotta say, again, I saw hints of one trailer. I had no idea that we're going to be following this character this entire film. It was a bold choice. I'll give Trachtenberg that.
I'll say, look, to be told that, because we were at least told at the beginning, and then they kind of ignored it, but we were told, look, this is a young Predator's first hunt. Great idea. For an elevator pitch, fucking great. Green light it and go. But I don't think that's what we get. In fact, I know that's not what we get.
So if I am doing another Predator movie, the pitch has to be something different. And I think this was really the only other way you could go with this is, why don't we focus on the Predator finally? It's audacious, but to Adam's point, I don't think that vision is 100% fulfilled throughout the movie. But I like contrasting this with Prey, which is about her first hunt and trying to get the literal approval from her tribe and her leaders. The Predator in this is literally doing the same thing. So I like that even though this is a sequel, it also mirrors its predecessor in a lot of ways, thematically with what it's doing. And much like Prey, the fact that these movies have screenwriters cracks me up because there's so little dialogue.
Yes.
Well, with the creatures, like that's how you get around it. Well, the good news is when you make the Predator the main character, it's kind of easier to write that in a lot of ways. But I have a theory that on first draft, the L. Fanning android was not in the script.
So who would you play him off of then?
Well, that's my thing. I think this would have I think this would have been almost an entirely, not fully silent, but you had like you had Deck on that like communicator thing he has, keeping tabs. Maybe his brother survived the whole movie.
Interesting.
And they were talking back and forth. That to me felt like something that was changed once this developed a little bit further. Because to Adam's point, it's a great elevator pitch, but you still have an hour and 45 minutes to fill. And nowadays, people don't like movies with a lot of talking to begin with. And we've seen the days of people watching a movie just to watch it and getting, look, I don't want to call audiences dumb, but a lot of times people want their consumption to be spoon-fed to them. I think of things like WALL-E, where a lot of that movie is silent. You know, it's watching the mannerisms of the character. I thought this could have been the WALL-E of Predator movies.
Okay. Well, we then see two brothers break out some lightsabers as they fight it out. Adam, why are these the same colors? Are we supposed to believe that this is what we will eventually see fight Arnold in the future? I'm already confused right off the bat.
You know, starting off, I'm okay. No, okay, we're on Yuta Prime or whatever this thing is. We're seeing, he redoes that thing at the beginning, as you said, of a creature killing a creature, killing a creature. Cool, you did that in Prey. We got some cool showcase of his technology. He's got this thing that he uses to get up to this cliff. But then he starts fighting, and we don't know what's going on. And this thing is shot so looks bad. I don't know which one is which. You're having these two predators talk. I don't know which one is talking. I don't know which one has the upper hand. Very quickly, I don't know which one is Deke and which one is the other one. I don't know the reason behind it, though we get some dialogue there that's going on. But you're subtitling something while I'm trying to watch action. I got no issue with subtitles. I got an issue with subtitles when you want me to pay attention to the action that's going on. But I think that this was a replacement beginning because I think they had a different way that they wanted this to start. I recently picked up, because it just came out, and of course I'm going to do this, the Predator Badlands one-shot comic. And that comic is about Deke going kind of on a mission, on a hunt for his father that sets him off on something, and his brother Quay drops him off on this planet for what he needs to do, and everything that goes along with that. It's not great, but it's a prequel to this movie. I think that was an idea they decided they weren't going to spend the money on, so they decided to do this instead. This is two people in a suit, in the volume, with very minimal set dressing, and it doesn't look very good. This was not a great way to start this out. I mean, none of them look particularly menacing or capable. The weapons, all right, sweet. I like lightsabers, and I just saw Tron, so I guess this is some Tron leftover with the red lasers going across the edge of it. But this is not a good start. It's really not.
Well, I was all set to rebel against you when you said that this is not shot well, because I think for the most part, this movie is directed very well. However, when you specified that it just concerns this one fight, I will completely agree with you. I don't know which one is talking. I don't know which one to pay attention to. I don't know which one to root for if I am to root for anybody. So on that end, I will completely agree that this beginning doesn't really grab me.
I'm just talking about this part right here. It seems like a reshoot or a change in design way after the fact, because nothing else looks like this, feels like this, or is stuck in this claustrophobic area of just fighting in a dark cave. So it's a really weird choice.
I also want to mention that we've been talking about the dialogue a lot. What Trachtenberg did was he went and got the guy who did the language for the Na'vi in Avatar to do the Predator language here when they talk back and forth. Gotta ask you, Adam, the fan, how do you feel that worked?
I don't need it. I don't need to have the Predator talking throughout the film. But I understand I'm going to be in a focus group and Disney's going to go, oh, we can't fucking listen to that guy. You know, I would like this more of a silent film with only clicks and clacks and stuff going on. The explanation of it later, I think, is done really, really well. The way they hunt for Red October, this thing, I think, is a very smart way to do it. I thought they got a good person to do it. I think they do a pretty good job with the language. Like, it doesn't take me out. And once I don't have to deal with reading subtitles over an action scene, yeah, you know what? Good job. And they definitely went to the right person to do it.
As somebody who hunt for Red October for the very first time about a month ago, I got that reference.
Here's the thing. As someone who lived so much of his life through the lens of watching Star Trek, this stuff has never bothered me. Yeah. It's also the thing of, like, you know, Star Wars, everyone just speaks Galactic Basic.
Yeah.
Except for Ewoks and the Wookiees, but they have 3PO there to explain it. I mean, she literally is 3PO in this movie because she's missing her lower half, yes, like freaking at the end of Empire, and she's literally being carried like Chewbacca carried him.
There's so many Star Wars references, I lost track of them.
Well, speaking of, this felt like, and this is weird, this really feels like a Star Wars movie more than it does a Predator movie. And I know that's it's a weird thing to say about a franchise that has really had an identity crisis ever since the first one, but this felt like a Star Wars movie with the Marvel humor thrown in.
Well, Matt, you're absolutely right, because at one point he throws her on his back like Luke did Yoda in Empire Strikes Back. There is so much Star Wars here. It blew my mind.
We'll argue to that point. We're still in a cave.
Yeah, okay. You're right. We'll save it.
Okay, so on the look then, how much was this movie made for?
$105 million.
Where did that money go? This thing's got some real inconsistencies to it. Parts of it look great, and then parts of it look like they only had one rendering, and that was it.
Yeah, and that goes to Adam's point that it could have just been a reshoot done at the last minute. Yeah, I can't tell these guys apart, but we see one fall to the bottom, and he pulls himself up saying that he's still alive, but his brother says that he still has so much to prove. And we see our protagonist, who we'll know as Deke, go on a ship, and him and his brother wonder when he lost his fang, as he says. Okay, so...
Okay.
Got Leo Gaps on this freaking phone call.
Okay. You with the Yutani. There is a character named Broken Tusk. So to do this and not have it be Broken Tusk, I want to throw a shoe at Dan Trachtenberg for this.
You're like the people who are upset that Rey wasn't Mara Jade.
But you don't give him a Broken Tusk and not have him be Broken Tusk.
I don't give a shit what they call him. I will say this, though. I think this guy they got to be Deke, Demetrius, whatever his name is. I can't say his last name.
Good luck saying that last name.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it. I think he does a tremendous job in this role. I think he's great. I think he plays off Elle Fanning very well. And while I don't really agree with having him be smaller than the Predator who fought Arnold later on, I find this guy and this protagonist to be pretty likable. Adam, are you just mad about the name, or is there more about this character you don't like?
Well, I get over the name. I'm just like, to me, that's a really weird choice because just of that's a character that's been used. I cannot stand the look of this Predator when we actually get the look of him. I think the actor playing him does a really good job physically. And I think even his voice, because he's the same one that does the vocals, the voiceover. So I think he does a good job there. I think this look is bad. I think his dreadlocks look like rubber tubes enough that every time I see it, I'm like, they're rubber. And I can tell they're rubber. And I think that the way they do the crest of his forehead, I understand he's supposedly younger. So I just can't stand his look. I really, really don't like it. Good job with the mandibles. Good job having those work the way that they do. But I don't like the look of this Predator.
Well, the joke I made at the end of the last podcast was he looks like Rawhead Rex from Clive Barker's movie from 1985. And if you look at pictures of that fucking creature, it looks almost exactly like this character. Yeah, I don't like his look either. I just like the way he's portrayed.
Well, this is the first time since Kevin Peter Hall that I actually feel like the actor playing the Predator is giving a performance.
Agreed.
And doing more with the character than has ever been presented. But I also complained about the Predator design in Prey. So maybe it's just a Trachtenberg issue I have with him and his makeup and production team with the creature design, because I haven't really cared for it in either of his movies.
I agree with that. We hear that Deke has earned not to blow himself up, as they say, and he's told that today he makes a vow that, as our ancestors did before him, he needs to earn his place in the clan.
I half expected freaking Mufasa to be his father. Someday my time will pass and you must be strong enough to lead our people.
How many fucking comparisons are we going to make in this fucking podcast?
Well, everything I mentioned is owned by Disney.
Yes!
A lot of Disney movies.
Deke is told of Jenna, the death planet, which even their father fears. But to get the Kalisk is to get the ultimate trophy and will prove his worth. Failure means death, and his brother makes this vow. The dad appears and asks why the task isn't done, and he's told that he deserves a hunt. But Deke is then called the clan's weakness and a runt, and then his brother is told to kill him. I do like this force field of lasers that they throw down. I think that's kind of cool. And Kawhi is about to do it, but withholds, breaking his lasers instead and putting him in the back of the ship.
What I did not fully understand until I was discussing it with somebody else, that entire fight at the beginning of this, Quay was supposed to be killing Deke. That because of this comic that I have in my hand, Deke failed the mission that his father sent him on. So he's already been told that he's a runt and worthless to the clan. This comic is basically what this opening scene was supposed to be of this movie, and then they scrapped it and did something else.
Well, I got it out of the opening scene. I actually got the fact that he was supposed to kill him in this.
Yeah, no. I get it when the father says kill him, but that fight, he was supposed to kill him.
Oh, okay. You realize that the lightsaber fight in the beginning, he was supposed to kill him. A fight breaks out between Quay and their dad, and Quay is taken out, of course, as the result of the cloak. Hey, that's not fair. The dad breaks out the cloak and just kills him.
Which, they keep talking about the cloak, and I'm thinking of a cape. Mm-hmm. The cloak is the cloaking device. Like, it's, no, Klingon technology. It's the...
It's just, I found that weird that, you know, this thing that we saw used so effectively in that first Predator film, it's like supposed to be earned. You've earned your place in this clan so you can have this cloak. I don't know, man. Everything about this just felt too video gamey for me.
On page, I think that sounds really good. But because they keep saying, earn my cloak, earn my cloak, earn my cloak, you just start to lose some of why it matters. And as much as I complain about Deke and his look, I think his brother looks fantastic, and that father looks badass.
I agree.
I love this look of the Elder Predator.
I felt like I was playing Mortal Kombat X, where you can play as the Predator. A lot of this movie to me looks like, maybe it's just my age talking, a lot of this looks like PS3 cutscenes the movie.
You're not wrong.
Not PS4, not PS5, you know, modern day games, which some of them look incredible. This feels like it's a generation behind.
Quay initiates the launch sequence, and Deke is launched to Jenna. We get a slow-mo fall. By the way, did any of you guys see this in 3D?
No. The only movie I'm going to go see in 3D is Avatar. Same. Because that's the way our Lord and Savior James Cameron demands we watch it. And he also demands you cross your legs if you even think about so much as taking a whiz.
By the way, he actually went to Trachtenberg and said he didn't agree with the idea of putting the Predator as a protagonist. But after he saw it, he quote-unquote said that he pulled it off.
We'll see. It says the guy who, oh, you can't make the Terminator a hero.
Yeah.
Terminator Dark Fate is the logical continuation of my franchise.
Take three.
We then cut to inside the ship, which is getting pelted with asteroids as Deke wakes up. He takes control of the escape pod and launches it as he's almost taken out by a hawk-looking thing, and he crash lands on Endor, which is what I took.
No, this reminded me of M. Night Shyamalan's After Earth.
Oh, God, yeah, I didn't make that comparison.
Where it's just, you know, animals that you find on Earth, but bigger.
Yeah, good point. He gets up and says, bring it home. We see him gear up as we even get a laser crossbow here. And
cool.
Yeah, I agree. I liked it.
Well, I was about to... If you're going to do this, just go ahead and play the Arnold music when he's arming up. Just go full fucking crazy with it.
Yeah, the score here is different and weird.
Yeah, well, this composer is Ben Wolfflick?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
He did Alien Romulus. He's done all of Trachtenberg's Predator movies, and I just think it's very eh.
Yeah, it's very generic. Deke wanders over, and here's something that's going to be repeated this entire show, boys. We see some tentacles. A lot of tentacles in this movie. Deke's arm is bitten, and he roars trying to fight back until he's taken up. Deke comes back and takes a few tentacles out until he gets on top of one and runs across and up some rocks. We've been knocking this movie pretty hard, but I'll give this a compliment. I like the scene. I find it to be pretty fun and pretty propulsive.
I like the way that it ends. I don't think that these tentacles look really all that good. I mean, shoot, I might as well get towards something I have towards the end of this. This looks fantastic to bring Groot into this film because this feels like James Gunn made a Predator movie.
Oh my God. It's better than that.
This is James Gunn Predator. But at the end when he's running up, jumps on the cliff, and you get that close-up of his mandibles while he's screaming at the tree. Yeah, looks pretty good. But him with his laser sword chopping through CGI tentacle trees... man, I know they're coming because they tease it, because this has got to have some humor where, oop, there's something behind you, turn around, oop, it's not there. And they try to make this Yautja be emotional, first by pounding the glass when his brother gets killed, and now little jokes and winks and nods. And I don't know if I need a Predator going through human emotions.
Yeah, that was something I bumped up against as well. The Yautja's out of reach, and he just looks up as we get the Predator Badlands title card. So 20-something minutes in, boys, here we have it.
Seems James like, Bond, Die Another Day is proud that it took so long to do this.
Seems like these title cards just get more and more minutes go this by before like, we see them.
It was like 20th Century Fox Presents Predator, yeah. Badlands.
I know.
At the bottom. I've heard, seen a lot of people ripping this. This made me smile. I don't know what it was. I think the score kicks in right here and it's good, but it makes me smile.
We see Deke heal himself up a bit, even wrapping up his arm as he throws... What's this, an exploding bug? What is this that he throws?
Oh my God, this is the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland, but he explodes.
We get more looks at the land as he's stepping through the fields, and we see these poisonous plants, which actually look pretty cool. I like these plants. He's hearing Yautja being called, and Okay, I'll go ahead and spoil this and say that my favorite part of this movie is Elle Fanning. Here she's playing Thea. She's going to have a double role as her sister Tessa later on. At first, I thought I was going to fucking hate her, guys, but she ends up being a great character. She shows up. She's bubbly. She's yelling at him and how to escape these plants as they blow up, but I find her to be very fun.
When I first saw the trailer, absolutely rolled my eyes. When she's first introduced and she's a little so happily and bubbly, oh my God, I was ready to kind of walk out and take my time refilling my icy. However, she is the best part of this movie, and it's not even close. She steals the fucking show right out from under the Predator. One, Fanning does a great job. It's not just the way it's written, and I think it's written pretty clever. She does a fantastic job with this role. I think she absolutely makes this worth watching for her in it.
Oh boy, I was squirming in my seat for the first 10 minutes of her introduction because I didn't want a girl boss Predator movie. That was the last thing I wanted in this modern world, especially another one put out by Disney, no less. But I think it's like she watched Prometheus and Covenant and watched the two Fassbenders and said, hold my beer, because this is pretty close. I would argue she's more believable at playing both sides than Fassbender was, because I saw Fassbender as evil both times, despite David being the more initially, or whichever one was supposed to be more benevolent. I'm like, okay, but you keep smirking, so I know you're up to something. Whereas here, it is weird, though, that the corporation has two androids that are polar opposites. It's like they were programmed to be 180s.
Yeah,
I find that a little convenient. Some of the jokes go a bit too far in that Marvel type of way. But all in all, for something that I was not endeared to whatsoever when she first stepped on screen, I do think she overtakes the movie without it being that controversial type of girl boss, to use that example again.
Believe it or not, she said that she did not study Lance Henriksen. She did not study Michael Fassbender. She studied David Johnson for this. And you can tell because she's playing this a lot like David Johnson did in last year's Romulus, which all of us complimented him on. So kudos to her for that. And by the way, she's the odds-on favorite to win an Oscar this year. I believe Sentimental Value will give her the Oscar. Hell, I would give her one for this too. I just find her to be extremely fun when she needs to be and very serious when she needs to be as well. I like her a lot. Deke throws the boomerang blade and it frees her as a pterodactyl looking monster is taken out by her, and we get her saying hi to the camera, which again, I was scared at this point, but Thea wins me over. Thea nurses Deke back to health, and I love this shot of him lifting her up. This is how we see that she has no legs. Just fun stuff here. She says that she's on a quest to get her legs, and she says that she has seen the Kalisk and that they can help each other. Deke is having trouble getting his weapons to work, and I like how he calls her a tool. This is something that an ongoing joke in this film, but I think Trachtenberg is injecting some humor, much needed humor in times when it's needed.
Yeah, he's making sure that my 12-year-old can enjoy seeing a Predator movie. He's doing it better than Shane Black. I mean, I look at it this way. When I went to see Predator 2 at 12 years old, that was the movie I wanted at 12. This movie is for a 12-year-old today. And that's not who Adam was back when he was 12. But this is for a Disney 12-year-old.
Deke says that he will use her and lifts her onto his shoulders as she just keeps talking. He throws her to the higher ground as he catches up. They run through some water and then he's shot at. She's telling him what does what, and that helps us, the audience. I like how she's pointing out this world. You know, this is a really different world, and her commentary is actually helping me understand it.
Yes, and in hindsight, this makes me even madder at Predators.
Yeah.
Because this is the world they should have been dropped on.
Good point.
Australia?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, this is basically Australia where everything is... But God's mission was, I'm going to kill you.
Everything is going to kill you.
Step foot outside your house.
It is a brilliant thing that she's just... And this is some of the smartest writing where... You know, I mentioned earlier, but she hears his language. He's like, hang on, let me translate. Okay, I'm going to hear you, but everybody else is going to hear what they need to hear. That you solved your problem in every country around the world.
Deke puts her down and cuts some branches. Adam's favorite part, as he tells her that his name is Deke. He puts together this predator-made campfire, and Thea just keeps telling her life story, including her sister, Tessa, who I didn't think we would ever meet, guys.
I thought it would be great if they got Dakota to play the other one.
You know, I thought of that as well. Why didn't they do that?
I thought it was going to be inside her as a different program.
Oh, interesting.
It's like that Krusty the Clown doll. Oh, switch it from good to evil.
Yeah.
But they do cool things. Like when we get close-ups of her eye, it's droopy. They do a really good job with making her look like an android.
The effect on her from the way that her skin tone, the makeup, the Weyland-Yutani logo when her eyes closed, even her hair, like it is a really good design. Right. And I appreciate that she, you know, she wore green sack over the bottom half of her and literally had herself strapped to his back to participate. Because so many actors and actresses would just be like, nope, film me on a green screen.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's address the Weyland-Yutani thing then.
Oh, I was getting there.
All right, well, he mentioned the logo. I mean, I was prepared for this because the trailer gave it away, but I don't know. I'm not crazy about the cross-pollination.
I mean, it's official. Alien and Predator are the same franchise. There's no doubt about it now. They are making it canon for both franchises. And that pisses, as the Alien fan, that pisses me off. But we'll talk about Trachtenberg's future plans when we get to the end of this thing.
Yes, and I have a question to pose at the end of this show. Okay. So. But I, like Thanos, I knew this was inevitable.
We then cut to Tessa waking up. Boy, that suspense didn't last very long. And again, I like how she's looking here. It's a modernized version of that nightmare fuel Vera the robot from Superman 3. That's what I thought of when I looked at this. And Tessa is told that further failure will result in her decommission and that Thea is with the Yautja. So how do we feel about Tessa?
Me, she looks like, again, for anybody that hasn't, she looks like the extension of Timley Oliphant's Kirsch from Alien Earth. I feel like she is the next evolution of that android. I think it's a pretty cool way that they do it. I think she looks good. I love that when she's talking to Mother. I kind of wish some of this was hidden from the trailers. I know why they're not going to do that, but damn, I wish I could have been surprised by all this.
Well, I made that connection to Oliphant because of the hair. The blonde hair.
Yeah. Which, oh, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
God, that hair on Oliphant just looks ridiculous. It's so bad. I really like that show a lot, but I found that distracting.
We cut to Thea and Deke, and I'll go ahead and say I love the razor grass. I think it causes some decent tension here and in other places of the film. And I'll give Trachtenberg this, you know, while not going James Cameron crazy with this new world, he definitely put some thought into this. Adam, would you agree with that?
No, because I've seen Jurassic Park movies. So,
but you've never seen razor grass.
No, we've just seen creatures stomping through the grass. I mean, it's fine, but this planet's just got a random pasture of razor grass because it needs to. It's fine. This feels video gamey. You need to find a way past this level.
A lot of the environments feel like it's, to use the video game analogy, this is like Pokemon, where you find a tree in the woods that you can't get past, so you have to go find the HM that gives your Pokemon the ability to use the cut attack to take down that tree. And I don't just say that because Deck, all these names sound like rejected Pokemon.
All right, so they meet this little creature, right? Now,
God, help me, Jesus.
I had a question after this movie. I mentioned when we got into this podcast that Jen was at Disney World. I FaceTimed her the night before she went, and the night I saw this movie. I said, I need you to tell me if they have any Predator Badlands merchandise for sale over there, and if they have this creature as a plush toy. She told me they didn't, but there was Predator merchandise there. God damn it. Again, this just makes me think of Mandalorian. Like, we have to have this little creature with them. Now, there's a plot twist where the creature is different than what we expect, but my God, Adam, did we need this?
No. Absolutely not.
You held your tongue there for a little bit.
I know, it scared me. Now,
there's times where I have fun with them together, right? There's times where I'm like, okay, that's fine. Ah, that's cute. Who the hell brings a plush toy to a Predator movie?
Right.
Harvey Weinstein.
That's and future series. You just made Thea redundant. You literally put the same character. You made one an android and one a creature for this planet. They almost served the same purpose until the final act of this film. But of course he can run through the grass. We don't understand. This might as well have been the animated movie because that's what this feels like.
Wow.
God, I thought Dolores from Jurassic World was the end of this, at least for the year. But I mean, look, if Disney has a property, they're going to find some way to shoehorn in a plush little creature for them to sell. And look, I get the marketing aspect, but to Adam's point, you've just undermined your other, I would call her comic relief, but she serves more than just that base function. But this is just here for yucks and to be cute. And I fucking hate this every time they do it. And I'm not a cold-hearted bastard, you know. So I like porgs, okay? So you clearly can manipulate me on some level.
But to me, this is my point. They are not making this movie for the three of us to go see it. They are making this movie for me to take my kids to go get them into a Predator franchise.
And we just fucking saw this in Jurassic World Rebirth. How many times are we going to say, oh, this fucking little plush creature comes out of nowhere?
I am Groot.
Oh, God.
That one actually worked on me, though.
Yes.
Of course it fucking did. They see a creature running through the field, and Dee stops him and Thea from running into the razors, and a fight breaks out. And we have this thing that opens its mouth vertically, and then we get a massive slow-mo explosion. They're taken up in tentacles, and we see this little creature save their lives by jumping into its mouth. And then we finally see this predator do what the others did, which is jump on a tree and wrap itself around it. This was finally when I looked at it. I'm like, holy shit, finally, I'm seeing hints of a predator I'm familiar with.
This is where there's a lot of this movie I like, but my issue is this. We don't have a predator who is in any way qualified to go do anything in this film. I'm sorry, but his father was right. This guy loses so freaking often. He is saved by everybody else in this film. He is not your protagonist. He is somebody who fails over and over and is saved by everything else in this film. And that's kind of shitty when you want a predator to be a badass.
But my favorite word in this retrospective, because I feel like I'm the contrarian. Now I know how Garrett feels in 99% of these shows, is that at least they're consistent. He doesn't suddenly become Superman or indestructible once he gets on this planet. They remember throughout that he's not up to par, so it makes sense that he's being saved by other people. Because look, if they stuck with the original Adam's theory that this was a female predator, you know, all the arguments would have been, oh, she needs everyone's help because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't turn into a super being. He just gets a fucking cloak, but we'll get there.
So every predator gets a cloak.
Hey. It worked for Harry Potter.
Deke then jumps on the creature and kills it, and then we cut to Tessa, and I love how she's decked out. You know what I thought of, guys? You guys didn't even mention the image I thought of. Was Charlize Theron in Prometheus. She's decked out in this white as well.
That's because you're always thinking of Charlize Theron.
Well, yeah, because I'm a straight male. Unlike one third of this fucking podcast.
I don't know, she looks like a dude in Furiosa, so I think.
That's true. We see Tessa and her crew take out some creatures by using the Ghostbuster proton packs, which is...
Yeah, now we're literally crossing the streams of other franchises.
Yes. You know what I like? I like this campfire scene with Thea and Deke. I think this is fun. I love when Deke says that his favorite part of the fight was when he punctured the creature and his blood ran down his face and the little creature spitting at him. This is fun stuff.
This is fun. It's cute. I think that Elle Fanning does a really good job of carrying the dialogue and just making it all feel just like in music. She's kind of setting the rhythm. She is setting the time. And when she's there and it's going, it just feels a lot more natural. Even this creature, which, God dang, I wanted to throw something at the screen. But when it's mimicking Deke, I'm laughing. I am smiling at this point. When he, you know, lights a stick on fire, I can't help but laugh. Like, I want to hate this thing more. And there's times where I realize it is stupid, but there's times where it absolutely wins me over as well.
Yeah, we just reviewed Jaws, and how can you not think of that when this little creature is mimicking him? I found that fun as well.
Well, I had sort of a realization. I was like, this literally is a Disney plot. Mismatched heroes who have to work together, and there's that quiet scene where they sort of learn to understand each other. I'm like, oh, if this was an animation, it would have been perfect. You know, they could have opened this with the castle. It's so much like a Disney. It's so much like a Disney movie because the roadmap and the structure is identical. Because like I think of stuff like Milan, where it's all about you're not good enough in society. You know, you're an outcast. That's Hunchback of Notre Dame. There's a million things they've done with that, and they love like these mismatched road trip movies. Or pairing the odd couples, Zootopia, Emperor's New Groove, there's a bunch of them.
You make that comparison, I gotta ask both of you guys. Trachtenberg has come out and said that he had three ideas when he came to the Predator franchise. The first was Prey, the second one was Killer of Killers, and then this one. You saying that, Matt, do you think there was outside influence from Disney to make it more quote-unquote Disneyfied, or is this Trachtenberg's vision?
I don't think it's 100% his vision. I think there was some major overhauls when the word got out and there was the backlash.
Agree, because I think Prey, we talked about it, and that movie, I guess technically, I mean, it doesn't have a MPAA rating because it wasn't released in theaters, but it felt as close to R as you could. Like, that thing really felt visceral and had that kind of up to it. Killer is Killer, Killer of Killers earns it and is very bloody even for animation. This one, this one hits the brakes a little bit, you know? This one decides it's going to be in the slow lane. Disney wants to make sure that you can wear Predator shirt at a theme park.
Not going to make the joke.
God, Adam, would you have imagined what, almost 30 years ago, seeing that first Predator movie, you would actually be saying that Disney would want you to be wearing a Predator shirt? Just crazy.
No, but you know what? I also never thought that Shane Black would have Predator hold out a hand with thumbs up either.
That's true.
So I can't say this isn't an elevation for some of the against some of the other movies.
Okay. Okay. I told you I would not elevate you to that fucking red.
Yeah, let's not get his blood pressure up.
No, but
no, they sold around this time, they sold merchandise with a Predator on it at Disney World because they had Tron Ares merchandise with Jared Leto's face on it.
Here it is.
Christ. Deke says that he doesn't have a clan, but he had a brother and his father killed him. He also says that he's here for the Kalisk. We see Tessa show up and go through the Predator's ship, and she's stealing some weapons. This is cool to see from another point of view, I guess. You know, somebody else walking into the ship and taking these weapons.
On top of it, we get to see skulls again.
Yeah. You know,
we get to see the trophy cool. wall, yeah. Which I almost wish they would linger a little longer, but it's much like Predator 2. It's just go buy it. But there's some cool shit on there. You know we see a dinosaur. We see, I know you're going to say it. We see Independence Day.
Of all fucking things to pull from, why pull Independence Day aliens? That was weird.
Because nostalgia sells.
Yeah. Good point.
And we are now at the point where people are nostalgic for that piece of shit movie.
Tessa then sees his mask, and one of his little grenades burns her hand. And then we cut to the next morning as Deke wants to go since the sun's out. He straps Thea on, and they're off. Cut to the bottom of the waterfall as Deke goes through and sees that the Kalisk drinks here, and he calls Thea useless for not speaking.
I felt like that was the exact same waterfall that Arnold jumps down.
Oh, wow. I didn't make that connection. Wow.
Like the way that it was shot, the way that everything, I'm like, did they really go to the exact, I swear that's the exact same one.
Interesting.
It's probably in my head, but that's where I went to.
Deke says that his brother protected him, and Thea calls out the Alpha and its place in packs of wolves, and Deke says that he will be the Alpha of his clan. So we've talked a lot recently about couples that have no chemistry. I like the chemistry between these two. I like the way they develop this relationship. Maybe a lot of that has to do with the way Elle Fanning's playing off him. Maybe it's the fact that this Demetrius actor is doing a good job. But Adam, how do you feel these two play off one another?
I think their chemistry is good. I think the back and forth is good. I don't necessarily like this Predator, but I think that they play well together.
The odd couple dynamic does grow on me as the movie goes on. So I'm not going to... It's not a major criticism I have.
They stop as Deke asks who they are amongst, and Thea spots her legs. I love seeing her just plug herself in and trying to get these legs to work. I also like Deke kind of getting a sense of humor as he says, now it'll be easier for him to walk. He then says that he will always remember her, and he wants her to be the first to see his Kalisk trophy. Deke is confused, though, as he's now felt used, and Thea won't tell him the location of the Kalisk, and now she has gotten her legs back. She has betrayed him, so she's basically warning him that her sister and people are going to come, and he needs to go.
Fully, I mean, to me, this was that, you know, she was using him the whole time, that he was a tool, which, of course, that I swear to God, anytime he's got emotion, I am not a tool, I am not, oh, yeah, you're... Fucking the screenwriter was a tool, because they keep trying to use the dialogue and use what's going on to hint at one thing when it's really something else. And you can only do that so many times, but they keep doing it over and over. Like, I just almost wish that we realized that, no, she wasn't benevolent. But no, it's just, we're going to play with words.
Deke blows up a part of Weyland Yutani, and we even get a screenshot of him holding his sword up in front of the explosion. Which, okay.
Way to go. Tony Stark Predator. What the hell? Okay, this is when in my theater, there was about five people who cheered, and this one person, I don't know, you could call him Adam, goes, Jesus Christ.
Deke is then attacked by the Kalisk, and we see him slice him up a bit before the Kalisk wraps his tentacles around him and is thrown right into the lab that Thea is in. She can't quite get her legs to connect as he's thrown around. She shoots at it as Deke connects it to a chain and screams at Thea to save herself. He then jumps up and slices off its head, but of course it regenerates into something more powerful and knocks Deke down before sniffing at him. Tessa then shows up and blows it up with a grenade. I like these ice grenades. I think these freeze grenades are kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get other than his lightsaber and lightsaber bow and arrow. And like, we need to get some cool ass weapons. And I like the freeze grenade. I wish we could have had some more exploration of what we have. But yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, he doesn't use it, but Tessa does.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I got to say, I can't stand this fight. I think it looks like CG on CG. And I don't think it looks very good. I mean, when the tail reattaches and the head reattaches, to Matt's point, that looks PS3 graphics. It's just, it is not well rendered. But when he's thrown into
PS3, that looks like fucking Steven Dorff getting cut in half in Blade.
Oh my God, it does look like Blade. You're right. But when he's like thrown into that room and as her legs are almost back on, he knocks them back off. I can't believe that's the physical comedy that makes me laugh, but that popped me.
So we see Deke wake up strapped in at Weyland Yutani, and right away he recognizes Tessa as not being Thea. She traps him in and he threatens to rip out her spine and crush her skull. He also calls her a device. She then moves over to Thea, and I love what they do to her eyes here. Very good makeup work in this film, I thought. Thea is excited to see Tessa, and there's a little back and forth between them as Deke continues to struggle. Tessa puts a device in Deke, and I seriously believe that these are two different characters, not the same actress. That was the greatness that Elle Fanning pulls off here. It's the same person playing two roles, but I feel like they are two different roles. It doesn't feel like Elle Fanning in both characters, which is why I like her so much in this film.
But you're also aided by the fact there's not a lot of this movie where they do like the parent trap thing of you have both of them in the same shot.
Well, there's a whole scene of that.
No, I said outside of that.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And it's also not as cringeworthy as the I'll do the fingering scene from Covenant.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing that embarrassing. So I thought when he gets captured, we were going to see one of the characters from like the Prometheus films and that we were going to get like a literal connection, because they never say when this takes place. Like,
yeah.
I mean, canonically, like you could have had Guy Pearce. You could have had Charlize Theron. I thought it was going to be someone from that era of the movies.
So Deke says that he doesn't like Tessa as he advises Thea to tell the guy who comes in that there's a map, and they get out of the vehicle as it's moving. We then cut to a Weyland Yutani ship moving across the sky as Deke is having issues with his arm. He does a patch-up job as he thinks of his brother and father and throws a tantrum. We then see Deke finding the mask, and then he's saying that his brother saved him as he prepares some more. He goes to the land and finds out that the creature that has been following them is the child of the Kallus. So here's the plot twist, and well, kind of like a wet fart here, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, this is like a Jurassic World where they're like, oh my God, it's part raptor. Yeah. I'm like, oh, you guys clearly put two and two together. You guys shouldn't even be qualified to be scientists.
Exactly.
Marty upset that he escapes. Okay, how many days did it take them to get to where they were? But apparently he gets back to his ship in like 45 minutes. So, and then he gets back in like 20 minutes. So I have no idea how, you know what, space. Okay, Final Frontier. I don't know what the hell's going on. I should have seen this coming. I didn't see it coming. I should be angry. I'm not angry. I just don't care.
I was just about ready to say, the question is whether you care.
Yeah, I don't care. As soon as he spits on him and she explains it, like, I know that's going to matter. And then when the Kallus sniffs him and doesn't kill him, I know it's because of that. So I just think he's marked for this planet and maybe he's going to build his clan here. I think that would have been a better way to... No, he's just... Okay. So I'm not angry, but I don't like it either. It's just... Hey, it's a decision. It's Trachtenberg's. Cool.
The weird thing is, I think I'm having a better time with this than you guys are.
No shit.
Well, let me
nice read, Velma.
Let me finish, you two bastards. But I'm mad at myself for having a better time with this because I'm seeing it go by and I find it entertaining. But when it's over, I just think to myself, why did I like that?
See, now you know how I felt about The Last Jedi.
Oh, God, don't. We see Thea's legs making an appearance, and this has now turned into a video game, boys.
Oh, my God, this is freaking God of War.
Yes. I do like these shots of Thea in the lab as a guard is completely eviscerated. And then we see these legs just take these guys out. Guys, this is straight comedy, right?
It is. And this is when I'm offended that they felt the need to come out and be like, no, it's only PG-13 because it's not human blood. No, bullshit. This thing is written, shot, staged for a PG-13 movie because nothing is overly violent. And when it has a moment, it cuts away. This stuff here, I'm okay with the levity. And I think it's because I like Fanning so much. This part as well, I should be rebelling against, but I'm not. Whenever she's doing it, I am perfectly okay. I'm going along for the ride.
I just love when we see these legs just by themselves, just like scissor these guys and take them apart. It's just fun stuff. Matt, how are you feeling about this, sir?
I'm looking in my seat for a controller to pick up. And I can't find one, so I feel like I'm watching my brother or something play a video game. He won't let me have the controller, so I have to go complain to mom. And then she says, go watch a better movie. And I'm like, okay, I'll go do that. And I leave to go do something else.
Even Deke is laughing at this point as we see him.
Because he laughs, because he throws a fit.
Yeah.
He gets angry. Yeah. He does everything that a 12-year-old child would do.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of children, the Callous child is doing some damage as we hear Mother talking to Tessa. Mother wants to know the status of the Yalta, and she seems satisfied with the answer that it is no longer a threat. The legs then get the guy's eyes to scan before taking him out. Yes, I just said that. More fights with these guards. The legs even do a Matrix move of flipping in midair slow motion before giving Thea a high five for their efforts. All right, guys. You know when I started hating this movie? When I saw the alien loader.
Okay, so before this, they mention about what they're looking for. And I think at this entire time, I think the Kallusk is going to be a red herring. I think I'm getting a xenomorph by the end of this film.
Yeah.
And I think it's teasing that I'm getting a xenomorph at the end of this film.
Like the Predator did at the end, not during the film, but at the end. When we see this alien's loader, it just
takes... This is too far.
Yeah, way too far.
This is too far.
Tia...
And all it did, it literally, to quote another movie, you made it bigger. Okay, it's a supersized power loader. I'm surprised it doesn't have Sigourney Weaver's voice locked into it for fucking Siri.
Matt, as the big fan of Aliens, how'd you like seeing the Aliens loader here?
Ah, God, this broke my heart. Because this was like when I saw the deep fake Ian Holm and Romulus. Where I'm like, you couldn't fucking help yourself. I also thought not only were we going to get a xenomorph, we were going to get a queen.
Oh my God. Just, I think it's coming, but I think it's just going to be in a future movie.
Put this power loader in the background of shots. Put it in the warehouse. Just have people in the background that if you don't notice it, they're using that to move stuff around. That's as far as you should possibly go with it.
You know, people give the Star Wars prequels a hard time, but you know what I always liked was the fact that George Lucas put in a shot of the Millennium Falcon landing and not calling it out. That's what you do with shit like this. You put it in.
No, we call that a bunch of other shit, like putting in Jabba the Hutt.
And Chewbacca.
Let's not use the prequels as an example of good fan service.
That one part of it, I thought, was good fan service, okay? I just hate when I'll go ahead and call it, an iconic part of Aliens is used like this in a movie like this. Thea takes out another guard, and her and Deke are reunited. He offers Thea his mask as we see the son of Kallusk return. Deke is determined to get his trophy as Tessa is on the hunt for them. A band of guards surrounds them as they approach Deke. He lets loose of some poisonous plants, and the fight is on as Tessa comes in on the loader.
I feel like I'm watching freaking Evangelion.
Yeah. Deke is shot back and then growls his frustrations before some saw blades come down to attack him, because I remember that on the loaders, the saw blades.
This, to me, feels like from here on out, the studio took over this movie and said, put this in, put that in. We gotta have the, hey, remember this button, and they keep pressing it over and over.
I hate this so much. Meanwhile, Thea is having trouble authorizing herself to enter, and then she disguises herself as her sister to get that authorization before grabbing... Before grabbing the guy by the head and pushing him into a wall. The fight between Deke and Tessa continues, and Deke can't get to her, but the Kallusk makes his way in, and now it's in a fight with Tessa. She sends the saw blades into it as Deke takes out some wires and throws a grenade at it. We see the son of Kallusk rescue Deke, and as the Kallusk takes hold of Tessa, she fires a shoulder cannon at it. So we got to bring the shoulder cannon in that she stole from Deke. The Kallusk and its son are reunited as Deke recognizes and embraces the Kallusk as well. The Kallusk then blows up from the inside because Tessa threw that freeze grenade.
Because they just saw Superman.
The creature.
Because we got to men in black this thing. Mm.
The creature then walks...
Eats Tessa. Tessa throws it...
The creature then walks.
Well, it's appropriate because this movie is a regurgitation of stuff. This third act is a regurgitation of things you've seen before in other better movies.
Mm.
Like this third act, we'll talk about this. This is like a Fan Four Stick level of not feeling consistent.
Don't, not yet. The creature then walks up as Tessa and Thea confront one another once again. Tessa points her shoulder cannon right at Thea's head as Deke takes her out, grabs the cannon, and says, "It's not yours." Deke then embraces the creature goodbye as he says his job's not done yet, and he lands his ship and confronts his father about getting his cloak.
Oh, yeah, because we have to resolve this.
Yes.
It's like I forgot this was the whole crux of this mission.
I know, I forgot about it.
Like, this is like watching Kill Bill and you forget, oh, she still has to go fight Bill at the end.
Deke says he has completed his hunt, but his father says he needs to get rid of Deke. Deke takes out the other predators using a double-sided blade.
Yeah, I guess he stole that from Darth Maul at one point.
I'm telling
you. In his trophy collection. Did Disney think, like, they watched the dailies and they're like, oh, this new Star Wars movie looks great? Because I guarantee you there's a bunch of people who can't, that work at Disney, that sit in those big boardrooms, that don't know the fucking difference.
Deke and his
father look at the predator and goes, oh yeah, that's the thing that traveled with Han Solo, right?
Deke and his father get into a battle to death. His father uses his cloak to take him down as a dust storm arrives to help Deke out a bit. Deke gets his dad down and fires some lasers at him. When his father tells him to take his place in the clan, Deke says that he has his own clan as Son of Kallus and Thea arrive, and Deke has his cloak. He looks at the camera and roars as his ship arrives, and we hear that his mother is here and isn't very happy, and credits roll on Predator Badlands.
So in my notes, four words, what the actual fuck?
Yeah.
I couldn't even get a proper resolution.
To leave it so open-ended, it just...
It's not satisfying.
No,
like, you can't.
It's not.
You can't keep doing this and expect tune in next week. Like, you are not Marvel. You haven't built up that. And this is not a franchise that ever preoccupied itself with tune in next week. But because it's now under this umbrella, they're thinking of the big picture versus the singular piece.
Adam, any thoughts on this final set of shots?
Like the fight with the dad? I thought it was nice to finally actually get some Predator-on-Predator action, especially with the fight beforehand being so lackluster. So I enjoyed seeing that. Enjoyed seeing the rest of the clan, because the family, come out from the Mos Eisley Cantina there and show up on the balcony. But weird ending.
Very weird. But how weird was the film as a whole? Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Predator Badlands? Adam, go ahead, sir.
I'm the Predator fan. This movie should take into consideration what came before, what you're going to do next, what has worked, what hasn't. I don't think they know what has worked, because it's not much when you look at all the films. But I think they're really confused as to what the Predator series is, and I think they're trying to remake it in a different image. When I walked out of the film, I went, I don't know how I feel about this. There was stuff I liked. There was stuff I liked a lot. There was plenty of stuff I couldn't stand. There were choices I didn't like. There was just change to the Predator mythos or Dory or what that I just don't know if I can go along with. So what is this? This is Marvel's Predator, for lack of a better term. I mean, that's what this is. Disney gave it to their PG-13 for boys division and said, create us something that we can make money off of. We paid $60 billion with a B dollars for Fox, and we need to start getting some return on that investment, because we really haven't gotten much yet. I don't know if this is going to kick off a franchise, but or continue to go this franchise. But this movie is the definition of, well, that was fine. It's an amalgam of a lot of things that came before, but everything is done kind of lesser. I can't stand the look of this Predator, and even if he's a runt and even if he has issues, he should look pretty badass. But there's times where I am very obvious that he's in a rubber bodysuit with rubber dreadlocks, and I can't help but say that takes me out every single time. Elle Fanning steals the show. She is a freaking delight, and much like Matt said earlier, and I said it too, 5 minutes in, I thought I was going to hate her, but she becomes the presence that you kind of want to see if you're going to see this film. The experiment might work for you if you want this video game Mandalorian and Grogu type of film. I don't want it in my Predator movie. So as much as I can say that there's a lot of this movie that is shot well, that is directed well, that looks well, I don't like the story. I don't like the choices that they make. I just don't. And that's problematic for me. I don't think this is how you try to launch this franchise into the stratosphere. You took it off of Earth. That was a good choice. But everything else you did other than Thea is pretty poor. I can't completely damn this because if you want to watch it, have a good time. But it's not my Predator movie. I do think it is going to be a lot of other people's Predator movie, though. I think a lot of people are going to like this. I'm just not one of them. I'm going to give it a 6. I think it's there with Predators. I think it's much better than The Predator. But it's forgettable for me. I'll take my son to see it. I think he'll enjoy it. But this is not my Predator film. 6 on 10.
All right. 6 on 10 for my best friend and huge fan of the Predator franchise. Matt, could you go higher?
Well, the short answer is no. The question is, can I go lower? And for me, as someone who went into this movie, I was curious, like I said at the beginning. And I wasn't sure what I was getting into. And clearly, the editors of this movie did not know what they were getting into, because I feel like this thing was compartmentalized to 4 different teams, and then they put all the pieces together. It does not feel like a holistic movie in the way that Prey did. And Killer of Killers, because it was an anthology story, that was kind of a precursor, because we all talked about how the weakest part was when they brought them all together. And I kind of feel like that's what they did here. It's a bunch of disparate stuff that maybe worked great on the page or in concept in the pitch. But once they brought everything to the forefront for a movie, it feels very fragmented. And my goodness, I could not get past just the feeling, the Disneyfication of Predator. Not in the violence or lack of it, depending on your taste, but just in the practices that I've seen them incorporate with the various properties they've acquired. Marvel, Star Wars, even Indiana Jones. So I can't say I hated this movie. I did not. But I also can't say that I really liked it. There were parts I really liked. I think the performances, considering that I was setting up for disdain for both of them, getting a pleasant surprise in that department is going to make me a little bit more lenient. But I really wish this was a movie, and I'd be curious to see if we ever got like a commentary track, or we find out that this third act was originally supposed to be different, because it kind of feels like, ironically, speaking of Star Wars Revenge of the Sith, where it's like, oh, we got to wrap up the thing with the dad, here's 5 minutes, go. And then you don't give me a satisfying conclusion. To me, that's kind of the slap in the face. Because I've seen installments in franchises leave on a cliffhanger or leave something open-ended, but I still felt like I got a satisfied movie. We talked about that with the John Wick chapters in particular. And I don't know what I'm going to score this. I'm going to be nice, because we're coming up on Thanksgiving, and I'm thankful this wasn't a disaster. I'm going to give it the lowest of 6s I can give, where I didn't want to walk out and leave. I didn't love it, but I also didn't hate it. I just sat there watching it with a thing of popcorn, and I hate to say turn my brain off, but that's kind of what the movie told me to do after a certain point, and I listened. So I'm going to be nice. It's a 6.
6 on 10 from Goudreau. Man, I've mentioned a few times, coming into this movie, I had no idea what to expect. I was the coldest out of all of us. And that's not because we've had 30 degrees temperature all week. I sat in this theater, and when we spend around 30 minutes before we finally get Elle Fanning, I was blown away by the fact that I'm looking at a movie that took this creature that fought Schwarzenegger tooth and nail way back when, and we're turning him into a protagonist who was learning how to get his wings, to use a metaphor. When that reveal happened, when that storyline started unfolding, I thought I was going to hate it. As the movie went on, I actually ended up liking it. And then that third act happened, and everything that was derivative about the Alien vs. Predator films was coming into full view. And then I'm looking at this loader take apart this Kalisk and this fight and everything else, and I'm just like, what are we doing? I loved Elle Fanning in this. I'm in agreement with both my colleagues in saying that I think she was the highlight, much like David Johnson was in last year's Alien Romulus. However, I am not looking forward to seeing what Dan Trachtenberg does next, and we'll talk about that here in a bit. But when it comes to the Predator franchise, it's exactly the way it was when I watched him take on all the militants, all the mercenaries, Danny Glover, the LA cop. I look at this Predator, I think Danny Glover could kick this fucking Predator's ass. There's nothing about this that I can connect to the franchise that it has been built on. So even Boyd Holbrook, I look at and I think, God damn, like, you could take this Predator apart. And that is a problem for me. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 5 because as it's going on, there is enough action, there is enough humor to keep you interested. But once that third act happens, both times I watched this, I kind of tuned out and I was wishing that track number was better than this. After Prey, which I thought was just a little better than average, I think this is about average. And I thought Killer of Killers was okay. But this particular film, Predator Badlands, gets a 5/10 from me. What the hell can Trachtenberg do next? Well, as we record this, guys, and it might be announced before this fucking thing posts, but I want to go ahead and say that at the time we're recording this, there are reports that Trachtenberg is talking to Arnold about playing Dutch again in a sequel. There is talk that Trachtenberg will bring back Alien vs. Predator. I'll go to Adam last because he's the fan. Matt, what the hell do you think Trachtenberg can do that would interest you in the next Predator sequel?
Next to nothing. And neither of those ideas appeal to me. I don't want a 70-something-year-old Schwarzenegger back. I don't want Alien vs. Predator in this format with how it's been presented, because I think it's been kind of lazily cross-pollinated with how it's depicted in this movie, and I don't want it to be continued. I kind of am just fine with not seeing another Predator movie for the foreseeable future, but I am probably going to be proven wrong in that regard.
All right, Adam, this thing's made almost $140 million. We've kind of established that that might be looked at as a flop, but who knows? Maybe Trachtenberg will get his ideas out there. Which of those ideas would appeal to you, sir, as the fan?
Yeah, we're getting another one. I don't think there's any doubt because this is still now the most successful, quote-unquote, Predator. I think we're going to get clan versus clan for the next one. I think we're going to see a bunch of Predators go at each other. I think we're going to get one more Alien film, and then I think we're going to get them all together, smashy, smashy. I don't know if he'll be the one to do that, but I got no doubt that's where we're going.
All right, couple more orders of business. One, speaking of order, let's have our ranking for these movies. Let me go ahead and give mine first. I'm going to go from best to last. And if either of my colleagues don't have the first Predator first, then you are officially kicked off this podcast. For my number one, obviously, I have Predator. I just got through editing that podcast, guys. I had such a good time revisiting that. And it is one of those movies that if they had made no more sequels, I would have been completely satisfied. I think everything about that movie works. Down to the lines, down to the 80s aesthetic, down to McTiernan's direction. Everything about that movie just works. Man, next I had, unbelievably, for a movie I just gave a 5/10, I went with Predator Badlands as my next one. Just because I can't tell whether it was ballsy or it was Trachtenberg going along with the Disney aesthetic of making the Predator the protagonist. But I think overall, with what he's trying to do, I think it works mostly until the end, which I already talked about. My number three is Prey. Once again, Trachtenberg. And as much as I found it to be pretty meh, again, I think it was kind of interesting to see what that protagonist did with this Predator, given that the technology was not up to snuff. Then I had Predator 2 after Prey, a mean movie, a not so funny movie, a movie that's sometimes not really fun to look at. But with what Stephen Hopkins was able to do with adding technology to the actual creature itself, which we talked about on that podcast, I think there's enough there to keep at least the big fan of that creature entertained. Then I have Predator Killer of Killers. It's an interesting film in that it establishes that this Predator was not just here to fight Arnold in the jungle. He's been around for years and years and years and centuries and centuries. And I liked that Trachtenberg played with that. And for the most part, I thought those were interesting to look at. Then I have Predators. We're at the end of the second tier here. Predators, look, more militants. We had Adrian Brody growling throughout that entire film. We had Robert Rodriguez not directing, but kind of directing. Everything about that movie, I'm not going to call it a mess, but it's just not an interesting film. And then, if you guys have seen Moneyball, we have the good people, we have the okay people, we have the layers of crap, and then there's us, is what Brad Pitt says in that movie. And now we have Below the Crap, in order, Alien vs. Predator, Aliens vs. Predator Requiem, and The Predator. Just all three of those movies. I don't ever want to see them again, and I don't even want to think about them again. So that's my list from best to worst. Matt, what about you?
So I'll start with the best, and it's Predator, undisputed. Like, it stands alone in the ring, and everyone else bows down to it because no one even deserves to share the squared circle with it. So then you ask me, okay, what's the second best Predator movie? That answer's pretty easy for me. It's Prey. I did have a couple issues with it, but overall, my opinion on it has actually grown since we first reviewed it. And then third, I would go Killer of Killers, because I appreciate the audaciousness of the animation, the violence, and I like how it was compartmentalized up until they brought everyone together, which I still think is the weakest part. So Predator is A tier, and then the next two are, I would call, above average. And then from there, I'm like, oh God, it's starting to get murky. Then I would go Predator Badlands. Then I would go Predator 2. Then I would go Predators. Then I would go The Predator. God, these goddamn titles. And then there's a cliff. And then there's AVP Requiem. And then there's the crevice that leads to the equator. And then the first Alien versus Predator.
You have Requiem ahead of the first Alien versus Predator?
Yes. Wow. And the reason I do is that Alien versus Predator came first. So it has a higher, like, anticipation factor, if you want to weigh that. And I also think it's the actual fights are laughably bad. And as I mentioned in that review, it was like watching wrestling. AVP Requiem is also an abysmal film. But the one thing I will compliment it about is I feel like the aliens themselves, I like treating them like a zombie epidemic that infects the town. And I don't feel like they're as much of a joke as they are in the first AVP. So I do weigh that. But look, you're asking me to defend two turds. So those are that's the kernel of corn you asked me to fish for.
We did corn earlier this year. You guys weren't too happy with it.
Oh, I had my fill. I never want to see. If I see that on my Thanksgiving table, I'm throwing it like Kevin Spacey in American Beauty against the wall.
I watched a King adaptation this week that had more of it, but we'll talk about that when we get to it. Adam, sir, the fan, I need to know, what's your order of best to worst, sir? I wonder what's the worst one.
All right, I'm trying to decide if I got to put the AVP ones in here now. All right. Predator. I mean, there's not much more that can be said other than Predator. You see, there's an echo. Second one for me is Predators. I know I'm the only one of us that liked that, but I enjoy Predators quite a bit. Then I'm going Killers of Killers. The way that they split it up is much like Matt. The final segment wasn't there for me. I love the time periods, and especially those first two segments were just fantastic. After that, I'm going with Prey. I'm going Badlands, and then I'll go ahead and include them in. Then I will go AVP, Predator 2, The Predator, and AVP Rectum. And much like Matt, I can kind of separate these out because you got the Predator that's A tier, and then I got like 4 or 5 B minus C plus tiers, and then buckets of crap with those final two down at the bottom.
I have an order of business we need to discuss. So this is what I've been most excited for.
Okay.
So if you remove the AVP films, pretend they don't exist. Alien, 7 movies. Predator, 7 movies. Which is the better franchise overall?
Oh, not even close for me.
Alien.
Yeah, Alien for me.
Okay, we're all in agreement. I thought that was going to be a fight because I know Adam's a much bigger Predator fan.
I going through some of these, I'm like, I can't, even knowing Alien 3, 4, and Alien C word, I got to give it to Alien.
So here was my logic, because I posed this question because I had to think about it. I think to further handicap this, take away the first Alien and the first Predator. I think Alien still pistol whips the shit out of Predator, because even the bad ones, I hate Alien 3 with a passion. It's more ambitious than almost any of these Predator movies.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And Aliens is a better sequel than any of the Predator sequels. I would argue, as an action movie, Aliens, and I do make this argument, Aliens is better than even the first Predator movie.
Not to mention, you had one likable protagonist throughout the first 4. An argument could be made for 3 Alien films.
But you know what Predator has? Every single theatrically released film is the exact same time.
Yeah, that's true.
Every single one of those movies, inexplicitly, is 1 hour and 47 minutes. Every one.
All right, Matt. We have one more order of business. Anyone who listens to the end credits of these shows knows that Matt is our scheduler. Matt, what is up next after Predator, sir?
Well, it's kind of appropriate because some would argue that people on this franchise deserve to be punished. And we're going to the Marvel cavalcade once again to go with the next theatrically released, just based on how we're working the schedule. So we're doing The Punisher, which includes the Dolph Lundgren 1989 movie,
Oh, God.
The Punisher 2004 and Punisher Warzone 2008. So we'll have a three-week detour into the twisted world of vigilantism. Everything from fake beards to weird accents to Johnny Cash hitmen. We're going to discuss it all in the next couple weeks. I'm very excited because I've seen all three of these movies. All three of them have things to discuss that I think will make for animated discussions, especially because Adam, in this trend apparently, has not seen... two of these goddamn movies.
Doesn't want to.
Guess what? If I have to, you have to. Look, I like heroes that are like super, you know? And there's nothing about this character that is super to me. I am not looking forward to this series. I remember having kind of a fun time with 89's Punisher, but I haven't seen it since 89. So I'm coming in pretty damn cold. I did get to interview Lexi Alexander years ago. I will talk about that when we get to Punisher Warzone. Matt's right. There are things to discuss with these movies, but I'm coming in once again pretty cold. And Adam, which ones haven't you seen? You haven't seen 2004 or Warzone?
I think so. Yeah, they're all blending together as I'm looking at these.
Wow.
Oh boy.
All right.
It's funny you say that because they're two different they're two very different movies.
Very different movies.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. Well, for the holidays, Matt decided to give us a big old lump of coal, but who knows?
We might blood-soaked coal.
We might have a good time with those, but until next week when we get to Dolph Lundgren's 1989 Punisher, who agreed to do this goddamn Marvel retrospective? Guys, we might not be alone in this podcast. Thank you, boys.
Why do you call it the Predator?
It's a nickname. You know, the data suggests that it tracks its prey, exploits weakness, seems to, well, enjoy it. Like a game.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Please do not touch anything.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
I'm sorry.
We're not dead yet.
What the hell are you?
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net. as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Mad Max film series, Avatar, and so much more.
I wouldn't wish that on a broke dick dog.
Instead of complaining, maybe I should help.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Think you could have found something bigger?
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Hey, you know what? Fuck this. This is bullshit, man. I want a gun.
Scheduling done by Matt.
Shit, something makes Cambodia look like Kansas.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
What the fuck?
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
My men are not expendable.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
This stuff will make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus, just like me.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
Billy! Billy! The other day, I was going down to my girlfriend. I said to her, "Jeez, you got a big pussy. Jeez, you got a big pussy." She said, "Why did you say that twice?" I said, "I didn't." See, it's because of the echo.
Nowadays, nobody gives a shit, which also leads me to believe that multiplexes are not long for this world.
Adam, remember the Metro?
Oh, yeah.
I went with a friend to the Metro to see Marked for Death, and I was 12 years old, and my friend was like 13, and the woman at the desk was like, "Nope, you're not coming in." So we ended up renting Tremors instead.
Well, you lucked out in that case.
Yeah, you're right. Adam, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned the rating.
Well, we then see two brothers break out some lightsabers as they fight it out. Why are they the same color? Why are we supposed
to... I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Okay.
We can keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
All right.
Keep going. I'll go.
My phone's ringing.
Okay, go ahead, Matt. Adam, why are these the same color? What Trachtenberg did was he went and got the guy who did the language for the Na'vi in Avatar to do the Predator language here when they talk back and forth. Got to ask you, Adam, the fan, how do you feel that worked?
There we go. Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
It's all good. I don't need it. But that fight, he was supposed to kill him.
Oh, okay. So you thought, okay, you realized that the lightsaber fight in the beginning, he was supposed to kill him.
Yeah.
Lightsaber fight.
That's what we called it when you were gone. A fight breaks out between... We see some tentacles. A lot of tentacles in this movie. Deke's arm is bitten and he roars trying to fight back until he's taken up. Adam, go ahead.
I was going to make a Trachtenberg and hentai joke, but that's...
Nice. Deke comes... Kudos to her for that. And by the way, she's the odds-on favorite to win an Oscar this year. I believe sentimental value will give her the Oscar. Hell, I would give her one for this, too. I just find her to be extremely fun when she needs to be and very serious when she needs to be as well. I like her a lot.
I don't think she's winning.
I do. I think I will put...
You know Universal is going to dump a truckload full of money to make sure Ariana Grande wins for Wicked.
She's not.
She better not.
No. So
I mean, I haven't seen Wicked for good, but spoiler alert, I heard it's not very good.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah, like the second act of most musicals.
Yeah, like, oh, you clearly, sidebar, yeah, you proved my point. This did not need to be two movies.
Ding, ding, ding. Deke throws the boomerang.
But it's much like Predator 2. It's just go buy it. But there's some cool shit on there. You know what? We see a dinosaur. We see, yep, I know you're going to say it. We see Independence Day.
Of all fucking things to pull from, why pull Independence Day aliens? That was weird.
Because nostalgia sells.
Yeah, good point.
And we are now at the point where people are nostalgic for that piece of shit movie. I mean, part of it is also the fact they made a sequel that is astronomically worse, if that was possible.
We got
it. And that thing had the cultural impact of a pebble.
We got to review those two movies.
No. I'm not. I'm telling you right now, I am not watching that second movie again. I had a reaction to that the way Adam did first time watching The Predator.
Oh, boy. That means we have to do it. Tessa.
To Matt's point, that looks PS3 graphics. It's just, it is not well rendered. But when he's thrown into
PS3, that looks like fucking Steven Dorff getting cut in half in Blade.
Oh my God, it does look like Blade, you're right. But when he's like thrown into that room and as her legs are almost back on, he knocks them back off. I can't believe that's the physical comedy that makes me laugh, but that popped me.
One of my best friends who also worked on the Matrix sequels worked on that shot of Steven Dorff getting sliced in half.
It's because they changed the ending.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So we see Deke. I find it entertaining, but when it's over, I just think to myself, why did I like that?
But I will say, I think this is why I like Prometheus more than you do. Because that movie was doing something different.
No, I like Prometheus a lot, if you remember that podcast. I was actually a big defender of that, if you go back.
Okay, well, never mind. Fuck me. Which is what Disney says when they try to put my R-rated movie on screen.
We see. I love you guys. We see Theus.
This is. See, now you know how I felt about The Last Jedi.
Mother wants to know the status of the. God damn it. It's been so long since I said it, I forgot how to say it. Yalcha?
You can just call it MacGuffin.
Okay. Wants to know the status of the Yalcha?
Like, this is like watching Kill Bill and you forget, oh, she still has to go fight Bill at the end.
That reminds me, those tickets went on sale today.
Yeah, but I'm not, I can't watch a 4.5-hour movie in the theater.
I can't either.
And they added it to like, Fortnite. Fuck you, Quentin.
You know what? Jen wants to go because that's her favorite movie. She loves the first one.
I love Kill Bill.
But, oh, God. I don't know if I could do it.
I like half of Kill Bill, so I'm curious to see if I'll like it in one movie. But really, Quentin, you couldn't blend it into 3 hours.
I know. He had to make it four.
I know Sally Mickey is gone, but have you heard of another editor?
Quentin Tarantino hasn't heard of editing.
Yeah, not since Sally Mickey died.
Deke says he has completed his hunt. So that's my list from best to worst. Matt, what about you? Okay, Matt's away from the mic. Adam, go ahead, sir. What's your order?
Right. So,
I was ready. Sorry, but if you want to go to Adam next,
No. I'll go to the fan last. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay. Sorry.
All right, Matt, we have one more order of business. Anyone who listens to the end credits of these shows knows that Matt is our scheduler. Matt, what is up next after Predator, sir?
It's Punisher, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Well,